to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm Pete Brooker, and today on the show, we are talking to Robert Tatiosian. He is the CEO and founder of Tatiosian, the British jeweler that's been redefining luxury since 1990. And a very quick overview of the brand, Tatiosian's luxury products possess a unique design ethos. The seasonal collections for both men and women have a distinctive signature, constantly reflecting and reinterpreting trends in fashion. Designs are contemporary but unusual, fashion-forward but timeless. And the website, tatiosian.com. And here is Robert to tell me how it all began.
So basically, my training was in finance, and I was working at Merrill Lynch when I first started out. And as a banker in the city, especially back then, 30 plus years ago, everybody was wearing cufflinks. So it was actually three different things that came together. One, I identified a niche in the market, which was to come up with cufflinks that were a little bit different, because back then everything was just double-ended plain cufflinks with initials engraved on them, very classical ones. I wanted to travel the world, and I wanted to be my own boss. So I thought, why not start with a small collection of cufflinks, something that's contemporary, put it in a small box, and get on a plane and start traveling the world, offering these cufflinks to the key retailers around the world, which is exactly what happened.
Very cool. Wow. It was a leap of faith for you back in the day. Were you confident that the empire would build to what it is today?
No, there is no such thing as, you know, when you start a business, you're never confident about anything. You always are wondering, is it going to be successful or not? It was more, I wanted to take a risk, and I thought, I'm going to give it 3 years. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, I'm still young enough to go back into banking. But I was very lucky on my first trip, which was to Japan. I had received quite a few orders from some of the key clients. And the Japanese are very, very loyal when it comes to brands, especially back then.
I'm wondering, do you still have clients that were with you from the beginning that you still see now?
Yes, absolutely. A lot of them, a lot of the stores, if they're still open and the business is still operational, They've been clients for 30 years, which is really lovely.
That's fantastic. And those cufflinks that you started out with 30 years ago, are they still around? Are they in the collections nowadays?
Or absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. What really put my name on the map was a cuffling, which is a watch cuffling. So the idea was, because I was always traveling, I was always thinking, oh, what time zone am I at? So the idea was to have two cufflinks. One, you could set it on New York time. The other one, you could have it on London time. And it was functional, but also something that was quizzical. So the watch cufflinks is really probably was our star product back then. And now we do have different permutations of that initial design. And anything that's mechanical. So we developed a lot of cufflinks that had gears in them, skeletons. All those are still in the collection. Of course, permutations of that particular style of cuffling. But probably one of the most iconic cufflinks that we ever did was the globe cuffling. And that has not changed in 30 years. And it's still one of our best sellers 30 years later.
I love that. I absolutely adore that. Can you, it's a bit of a stupid question, but can you patent a cuffling idea like that?
Absolutely. You can. You can trademark a design, which is what we tend to do with anything new that we come out with that we really feel very strongly about. Right. The problem with that is that to trademark a design involves filing trademark registrations in, now, before it used to be just a European community and the UK. It used to fall under that. Now you have to do it for the UK, EU, you have to do it for China, you have to do it for the United States. So you really have to register the design globally. And you're talking about anywhere between 6,000 to 10,000 pounds to register a design all over the world. And all you need is the person who wants to copy you to just make a small change on that design and you're not protected anymore. So we do trademark a lot of our designs that we feel very strongly about, but it's becoming increasingly expensive and increasingly complicated, especially now that we have to do another registration just for the UK.
Oh my God, that sounds like so much. Sounds like one of those headaches that you just don't want to see any of those paperwork.
Absolutely.
Just let someone else in the know do it all for you. But I mean, I've been in the weeds with this with a gentleman who's just recently refound a brand, Reynolds Sunglasses. These were the glasses that were featured at the beginning of the Italian Job. And so he was telling me about how when you revive a brand, you have to not only get the trademark but the patent, and then there's different levels of trademarks. I think he went in at like level 9 or something because his fell under spectacles and props and stuff like
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely, yeah. You have to register the class very complicated.
A real,
that's when you register your brand. So you have to make sure that you're registered in all the different countries in the classes that you want to be in, and it's a little bit tricky because how do you know what kind of, you might be doing jewelry today and you want to do, let's say, shirts 10 years from now, and yeah, unless you register early on, somebody else, and that's happened to me in China, somebody else has registered Taiyuan for one of the classes that we are not currently in, and to get the registration back is very, very expensive.
Oh my word. That just sounds like an endless week of emails back and forth. But yeah, rather you than me on that one. Robert, perhaps you can tell me about the, I know that you do accessories for both men and women, but maybe you could just tell me about how the appetite for men's accessories has changed over the years, and what changes you've seen, if any permutations over the time you've been in charge.
Well, in terms of the trend for men's jewelry, luckily for us, that's something that keeps gaining momentum and keeps going from strength to strength. Of course, traditionally, men's jewelry was just your wedding band, your watch, and a pair of cufflinks. Now, that's changed quite a lot over the past 15 years, 20 years, with especially a big trend with men wearing bracelets. That came with the metrosexual man, and increasingly with the whole gender fluid kind of trend that is currently in the market, where you could have somebody wearing a strand of pearls as well as a pair of cufflinks. So the market has opened up in the sense that men feel a lot more self-confident in terms of how they express themselves, how they dress. And of course, with the whole casual lifestyle, you can see men wearing a lot more bracelets, necklaces, rings, even earrings. I was just looking at someone the other day in the gym, and he's wearing like a pearl earring that was dangling from his ear, and it looked great on him. So I think men are not afraid anymore to wear jewelry and to stack bracelets, and that trend is one that's here to stay, and luckily for us. And you do see bankers, even, like, for example, you can be having lunch in Milan, and you have a banker sitting next to you wearing a suit, and he's wearing his cufflinks, and you look at his wrist, and he's wearing like 6 bracelets, one stacked on top of the other. So the trend is there, and it continues. We have guys that come into our store. They're like walking into a kid's store because they're like, they show us immediately their wrist, and they're like, look, I've got three of your bracelets. I want to add another one today. And they come out with wearing the bracelet. They don't even want to have it in the package. They want to wear it straight away.
Oh, that's awesome. And when did you first start noticing this, especially you touched on like the different gender and the, that kind of fluidity between the sexes? I mean, if I give you a quick insight, I grew up and I've been in a band most of my life. So I always feel like the creative elements, you'll see people on stage. I was on stage myself for a time. And then, this all stuff like eyeliner, this was all the stuff that the artists and the creative people were doing anyway. And I'm just wondering if it kind of just takes a while for, say, the business class to kind of latch onto that and express themselves in the same way? Or is it now we're reaching a point where it doesn't really matter anymore if you come from a creative background, because this is like how you'd like to express yourself anyway? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms, you know, there's no question that if you look at jewelry 25 years ago, it was only the rock stars and musicians that were wearing these big, heavy silver ID bracelets, you know, the rock and roll kind of look. And that's, you know, that before the metrosexual man, it was the metrosexual man. First, it was the rock and roll movement and all the musicians, and you hit the nail on the head with that. And then you've got the metrosexual man. But, you know, and it used to be like really chunky, heavy, slightly gothic-y looking sterling silver pieces. Now that's right. Evolved to so that today you can have somebody who is a musician, a banker, a painter, you know, any type of profession wearing jewelry. So it's no longer limited to, you know, segments. So the audience is much right. bigger.
Right. Interesting. I noticed on the website there's watches as well that people can buy some very individual, unique, beautiful watches. So is that quite a scary market to move into as well? How long have you had watches on the site?
I've had watches for selfish reasons, because I wanted to design a watch that I could wear, which I say is my own design. So watches is a very tricky sector to get into as a jeweler, because what tends to happen, unless you've got, you know, millions in terms of budgets to advertise, usually people tend to like to buy watch brands. So they want to buy a Tag or a Rolex or an Omega. I introduced watches because I wanted to complement the watches to complement the collection. So for example, you know, I've introduced watches with gears on them that match the gear cufflinks, or watches that have a face that's lapis lazuli to match the lapis lazuli cufflinks, or a face which is a guilloche of mother of pearl to match the guilloche cufflinks in mother of pearl. And we also frequently offer, for example, in the Middle East, they love giving gifts as sets. So they love to give a cuffling with a watch and a pen and a big coffre, you know, for VIP gifts.
Where do the watches get made?
They get made in, I tend to use Chinese movements, and they get assembled in China.
Interesting.
So I use Swiss movements, Swiss movements and Japanese movements, and they tend to be assembled in China.
And would you be tempted to do collaborations, or have you also done collaborations with other watch brands to kind of link those up?
I've thought about it. That's something that's been on my mind, and actually to collaborate with a watch brand with our jewelry in terms of offering them, you know, cufflinks or bracelets that would sit alongside their watches. But that's something that's on the back burner for the time being. Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll keep an eye out for that. I noticed on also the website the stones and the various stones that come with some of the rings. And my girlfriend's into her jewelry. She's into her stones. And I wanted to give her a pearl later on, as in pearls of information. I was hoping you could tell me what stones are popular right now and what is driving that demand as well, if some are more popular than others.
In terms of stones, we tend to use every possible semi-precious stone you can think of. So in terms of lapis, tiger eye, or hematite, and we also use precious. So we use rubies, sapphires, emeralds. And to be honest, there's nothing that really stands out in terms of, wow, we're selling more ruby bracelets than any other stone.
Right.
But what I can tell you is that we do have increasingly men coming in to buy a ruby bracelet for themselves, or a emerald bracelet for themselves, or a sapphire bracelet for themselves. And we've got a collection called the Nodo Collection. And these are like very thin bracelets with a 18 karat gold clasp or a silver clasp. and they're really nice to stack. So you could wear like three or four of them on your wrist, and they don't really, because they're so thin, they're not bulky, and they look good on, they look very easily. They look good on your wrist.
I'm looking at
there's not a particular stone that I would tell you, oh, that's the hot stone of the moment.
but it's interesting that guys are now turning their heads to stones that perhaps they wouldn't have done in the past.
Absolutely, because you would normally associate, you know, a ruby bracelet with something that a woman would be after. But the way the stones are cut, they're done in a very masculine, well, not necessarily masculine, but gender fluid way. Let's put it that way.
I like the Stonehenge bracelet with snowflake obsidian. Have we got? Why is it called Stonehenge? I'm curious. I'm just having a look here. That looks great.
Because the snowflake obsidian has all these veins in it, so it looks really old. So we thought, you know, Stonehenge because of the stones there, and you know, we always try to come up with something that relates to the particular design. Or the particular stone. In this particular case, because the stone looks old, then we called it Stonehenge.
Nice. That's a favorite. I reckon everyone should be checking this out, by the way. We'll leave the links to the website over on the show notes. Robert, thanks for taking the time out and speaking to me today. I was going to just close with a question of how are you guys coping amongst the pandemic, and how have you had to adapt to it?
Well, it definitely has not been an easy year and a half. I must say I'm very thankful for all the support that we've received in terms of grants for the shops that were closed and the furlough scheme, which has helped me to continue operating, with especially the Flexi furlough scheme, where most of the employees have been on furlough. And on flexi furlough, so basically gearing up and down depending on the volume of business and the time of year that I need them to be working. So that's been a huge help. Of course, having the retail stores closed for such a long time was difficult, because we have to pay rent, we have to pay service charges. So that was a little bit tough. But, and then in terms of the wholesale business, luckily we were able to continue servicing our accounts around the world just by doing video calls. So that was obviously the video calls were a very big help for us to continue working. And of course, web was the area of growth that actually, it didn't make up for the drop that we had in retail, but our e-commerce website is doing very well, and that's the main area of growth that we're experiencing. So we managed to come out, and we're healthy and profitable because we looked at our expenses very carefully. We had the government schemes that we kind of applied for, and just focusing on the business a lot more, and not doing things that were only doing things that were very necessary. So in terms of developing the collections, we developed collections both seasons, but instead of having hundreds of pieces, they were much tighter, much more thought out collections.
This won't be any use to people listening to the podcast, but I'm wearing one of the bracelets. Let me see if I can get that to the webcam for you.
Ah, okay. Cool.
So I'm a fan. This is
Thank you so much, Peter.
The initials of a gift from a girlfriend. So, and do you still do that on the website, I presume, where you can put initials?
Yeah, that looks like
the bespoke elements.
Yeah, the bespoke. Is that the pop regatta? It's a silver clasp, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
silver. Yeah, clasp. That's our most classic. That's our most classic style. Yeah, in terms of bespoke, we do have clients that come in and they want a specific size or a particular color of leather. you know, we do a little, you know, we always try to accommodate them and, you know, do the tweaking that makes them happy.
It's great. And it's these little touches that just make it so special. In fact, this is a banner on my LinkedIn banner because it's got my initials so people can see it.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. That's the other thing that we're seeing increasingly, which is, you know, people love the personalization aspect. So we do offer free engraving for clients. And in fact, we just got a second machine for head office because the girl in retail is so swamped with all the engraving requests. So now we have a new machine, incredibly expensive, for head office, so that we can cater for the web orders.
Do you know what though? It's a godsend though to have something like that, because it's what do you buy someone that's got everything? Not saying I've got everything, but just buying something for somebody where you're really stumped, knowing that you want to get them something personal and something with a thought in it, having their initials on something that they're going to see.
And that you've actually gone the extra mile. It's not like you've just walked into a store and picked something up, that you've actually went to the store, you had it specifically engraved for your partner or for your friend, and you've gone through that effort, and it just shows care. And I think especially coming out of, you know, the pandemic, people are very, there's a lot of raw emotions. People are very susceptible. And I think, you know, this, you know, especially when you're gifting someone, giving something so personal is so much more meaningful. It shows that you care, and people want to be cared for these days.
Well, exactly. And I think that's the difference between just being nice and doing the bare minimum and being considerate. Like, being nice is just turning up to a party with a bottle of wine. Being considerate is turning up knowing that they like a specific wine because they've been
absolutely
to that particular part
of the country. Or cooking a beautiful dish at home, kind of thing.
Yeah, or getting your girlfriend to cook a dish to take. same. Robert, thanks again for taking your time. Enjoy what you're doing in Austria. There's a great museum over there. I think it's the Belvedere. Babe, it's that Klimt in the Belvedere.
What, in Lech?
Is it in Lev? The Kiss, the famous Kiss painting by Klimt.
Oh, really?
That's in Austria, yeah.
Okay.
Well, we're definitely worth checking
out. I'm planning to go for a nice little hike. That's what I'm planning to do tomorrow.
Okay. Well, I hope you enjoy as much sun as we're having here. Great talking to you, Robert. And
great, Peter. Have a great evening. Thank you.
You too, mate. Take care of yourself.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you, Robert. How about that? Amazing story and some amazing jewelry that you can find over at tatiossian.com. We'll put all the links to the show over at menswearstyle.co.uk. Make sure you're following us on the social at menswearstyle. That way you can stay updated to when we do new articles, new podcasts, etc. And if you want to come on the show, maybe tell us about your journey, tell us how you started your brand, you can email us here at info@menswearstyle.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Until next time.